Well, now, the thing that we most want to get out of our discussions and our study of the scriptures is the application to ourselves. Nobody needs more changing than me. We consider in Revelation, it speaks of the dragon, that old serpent, the devil, and Satan. The dragon is the tyrant, the corruption of God's attribute of righteous power. That ancient serpent from back in the Garden of Eden, the deceiver, the corruption of God's attribute of wisdom or truth. Then we have the devil. What's the literal meaning of the word devil? Accuser, that's right. In fact, in British legal parlance, an attorney is called a devil. Of course, in some other circles too. And the literal meaning of the word Satan is the enemy, as in our adversary, the devil. Now, in our understanding of the scriptures, it's nice to have some foundation to know whether it's guesswork, maybe an educated guess, or whether there's something substantial behind it. Now, most of Revelation explains scripture found earlier in the Bible. Okay, we'll try and see if this is still better. Otherwise, how would Revelation be revealing? For example, I think we're going through a little faster than we might like. Here we have Daniel. Daniel chapters 2, 7, and 8 give us prophecies concerning, you know, what's going on in the world. That's Nebuchadnezzar's image, the four beasts, and then we have the ram and the he-goat. Let's consider first, in Daniel 7, we have four beasts. And one of them, the third beast, has four heads. Now, if you add all those heads together, how many heads do you have? One plus one plus four plus one equals seven. Now, how many horns does a lion have? None. How about a bear? And how about a leopard? So the total number of horns we have come from the fourth beast, which is 10. So collectively, our four beasts in Daniel give us 7 heads and 10 horns. And this gives us our preparation to understand the 7 heads and 10 horns in Revelation. We see it in chapters 12, 13, and 17. Now, when we consider Daniel chapter 8, we have the ram, two-horned ram. That would be the Medes and the Persians. By the way, Paris means division. So the Persians were a division of the Medes. And we have also this he-goat with a great horn in the forehead. And it comes and it smashes into the ram, and the ram is broken. But how can we be sure of such interpretations? There's nothing really left to the imagination, because this is a Persian coin from ancient times. And we see here's the horn on this side, and so there being a horn on the other side. Ram, as they projected themselves. We go next, and this is a Macedonian coin. We have the goat with the, this is the goat, and the great horn on top. The next to Macedonia, which is northeast Greece, is the Aegean Sea. What does Aegean mean? Somebody had to tell me too. It means the goat seed. Alexander had himself, had his kingdom displayed by the, or represented by the goat. And now, one more coin, Grecian coin, where we see the Macedonian goat with the horn erected over the fallen ram. So there's not much left to the imagination there, is there? Now, how about the seven heads? I will suggest then that the seven heads can be understood as, first, Babylon, second, Medo-Persia, and now we have the goat with four horns. First, Pella of Macedonia, that would be Alexander's capital. And then when he took Egypt, the city of Alexandria was founded. And then we go to Greece. Antiochus was the one of the Seleucid kings. They alternated between King Seleucus and a King Antiochus back and forth until you get to the third or fourth ones. Each of these now in turn has ruled over the Lord's people in Judea. But now we have a problem. The fourth one in Constantinople or in Thrace, Constantine hadn't come yet, so there's no Constantinople. But when did they reign before Rome did? And the answer is they didn't. So the strange thing happens. Rome takes over, and then afterwards comes Constantine. Now, Constantine is defending the Christians, both good and bad, and he knows that if he tries to reign from Rome, he gets his throat slit. So he rebuilds the capital, what he calls New Rome, in the city of Byzantium. But Byzantium is far east, northeastern, too far northeast even for Greece. That's in Thrace. So eventually the fourth horn does reign, but not until after Rome had a crack at it. So I will suggest these as the successive heads or capitals of the world. Now, I always thought I knew what a dragon looked like until I saw the one that the Romans used to depict themselves. And this was used as an ensign for the Roman forces. It has the body of a serpent. Does that sound familiar? And the head of a wolf. Now, the goat was used to represent the Grecian capital, the Macedonian capital. But the Thracians used the wolf. Now, Brother Christy Crisan can tell us more about it. But one of the divisions of Thrace, Dacia, used something that looked like this, only it was hollow, and they held it up in the wind when they went to battle to go woo, 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 to spook their enemy. Now, also we see in Revelation 12, the seven heads and ten horns, but it was on the seven heads that we see the diadems. The crown. Not until we get to chapter 13 does it change until we have the diadems on the ten heads. So first the diadems are on the seven horns, then the diadems are on the ten heads. What does the diadem look like? Well, there are two kinds of crown in Revelation from two different words. The one is a stephanos, or laurel wreath of victory, that we have in Revelation chapter 9, verse 7. And that's what we see, laurel wreath of victory on the head of the emperor Nerva. But then we have the other crown, the stephanos, excuse me, the diadem crown, And that is a string of jewels. We'll see more of this a little bit later. Not until the century do we encounter the diadem crown. The earliest would be actually towards the end of the 3rd century. But we see the difference in the type of crown. This is the kind that we're talking about. Revelation 12, verse 4. 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his heads, 7 diadems. Now, changing the subject just for a moment. When you see the map of Italy, what does it look like? A boot. Or, as another brother pointed out, doesn't it look more like a stone smiting the Nebuchadnezzar's image on the feet, knocking the legs out from under the Roman Empire? Sometimes the Lord doesn't leave a whole lot to our imagination. Now then, the 10 horns commonly are identified with the tribes that took over the Roman Empire. And we find out in history, first it was the Heruli, or Heruli, that overthrew the Roman Empire. What they did is to take Romulus Augustus, the last Roman emperor, depose him, but then they killed his no-good uncle, his really corrupt uncle. And that was the end of the Roman Empire as such. And it was taken over by the Heruli. And then the weather was getting cold up in northern Europe, and so the tribes came down and in turn took over every last square mile of the Roman Empire. Now, we'll get to see the coins that the these Germanic tribes wore. They went to get the approval of the East Roman Emperor. And by the way, the East Roman Emperor is ruling from what was Byzantium, and it was rebuilt by Constantine, modestly renaming it after himself, Constantinople. And so they each one of these tribes got the Roman Emperor's permission to use the diadem so that their coins would be legal tender everywhere in what had been the Roman Empire. So the Heruli were conquered by the Ostrogoths, and then the Lombards later came down into Italy. And those of you who are sports fans might remember the name Vince Lombardi. That simply meant that they came from the Lombards. But in addition, the Vandals went down into Sicily and North Africa, the Sueves into Portugal, the Visigoths into Spain, the Franks in the north and west parts of France, the Burgundians, the Alamans in Germany. The Spanish still use the name Alaman to represent somebody who came from Germany originally. And then you have the Angles and the Saxons in England, who took over the country of England from the Britons and the other Celtic tribes. Now, we're going to go through and take a look at each of these tribes and their coins. I would have initially said, what's the use of that? But I think we will see. Now, let's count the number of these tribes that coined. Odoacer was the one that overthrew the West Roman Empire. This is the one who overthrew him of the Ostrogoths, or Eastern Goths. And again, you notice he's got this is a very fancy diadem that he's wearing. Then we have, this is the queen of the Lombards here with the diadem. This one is of the Visigoths. This one is of the Sueves who went down into Portugal. This one is of the Vandals. He's got his diadem on. The same is the name Louis, Clodvig, and Ludwig. They're all from the same name. And here we have the Burgundian coin, the diadem. Here we have one of the Alemans in Germany. That's a fairly fancy one. And finally, the Anglo-Saxons here. How many was that? 10. That's right. There, we count up the number of these coins here, and there are exactly 10. Not 9, not 11. Now, eventually, there comes one who makes it 11, and he takes down 3 of the others. But we start out with 10. First, we have the diadems on the 7 heads, and then we transition to the diadems on the 10 horns. Now we come to a question, and this is for the skeptic or the atheist. 3rd century manuscripts of Revelation now. That's before Constantine. So there's no fudging by the reigning church. 3rd century manuscripts know that it would be in the 5th and 6th centuries there would come exactly 10 Germanic tribes that would display the diadems of the Royal Empire, Roman Empire. And of course the answer is, it could not happen except by divine inspiration or a remarkable stroke of luck. Now, consider the devil and the dragon. The great dragon was cast down, the old serpent, he that is called the devil and Satan, the deceiver, that's connected with the ancient serpent, the deceiver of the whole world, he was cast down to the earth. Paganism, the heathen religion, fell. It was replaced by Christianity regardless of the form, but it was indeed cast down. The great dragon, the emphasis on tyranny doing that job. I'm getting a little careless here. Now, how did they understand it? I released the Christians from persecution, or at least attempted to. Here we see a coin of Constantine himself. And you can see the diadem. And as he displays it, here is the cross erected over the fallen dragon. His successor, Constantius. Interesting, Constantius was not a Trinitarian in any sense. He was an Arian, especially his wife was. And I suspect she is the one who persuaded him. But he also wears the diadem and shows the cross erected. But here, the dragon is put under his feet. Sound familiar? Now, the 7 heads and 10 horns appear one last time. That's in Revelation 17. The 7 mountains are mentioned in verse 9. The 7 heads are 7 mountains on which the woman sitteth. We turn now to a Roman coin. This is a coin of Vespasian. Remember, he's the one under whom the city of Jerusalem was utterly destroyed. This is showing Rome. Can you count the number of mountains this animal is? But it looks like it might be a wolf, and that's appropriate also. So it's not hard. They made that identification too. And Constantinople also claims to be built on 7 hills. Now, remarkably, scripture in Jeremiah about Babylon hath been a golden cup in Jehovah's hand that made all the earth drunken. And in Revelation 17:4, the woman was arrayed in purple and with scarlet, and gilded with gold and precious stone and pearls, having in her hand a golden cup full of abominations. And here we see Rome again pictured as a woman holding out this. I think they'd have had more sense. So when it comes to interpreting prophecy, it is not and should not be simply guesswork. We can feel a lot more of common sense. Isn't it Mark Twain that said that common sense is not so common? Now, we'll go further. We will in just a moment here. Conclusions, we can reasonably conclude the seven heads are seven successive world-class empires which sequentially bear rule over most of the Lord's people as well as over the world. Hence, it would appear the prophecies of chapters 12, 13, and 17 were seen by those who lived during the papal reign and the Protestant era. So it is chapters 14, 15, 16, and 18 that remained to be fulfilled towards the gospel age, during the, quote, last day, the day in which we live, the harvest of the gospel age. So what might we expect in coming years? And these I suggest. Again, the events of the last day are seen in Revelation chapters 14 to 16 and also 18. But there's no mention of Christ's second advent in chapters 12, 13, and 17. So we would reasonably expect that that's already in the past by our time. Reliable expectations for the next several decades are most likely to be found in considering that the last day itself is divided into seven parts. We see this from Joshua at Jericho. The siege at Jericho lasted for 7 days. Each day they went once around the city blowing the trumpet. Now we have our seven trumpets of Revelation identified. 7 days, seven trumpets. And of course, on the last day, you can say, when do you reckon the blowing of the trumpet? Is it when they started blowing it, going around the city on the first of seven times? Or is it at the end of that time when there's one last blast of the trumpet and the wall falls down? And also, we can study the seven last plagues of Exodus and Revelation. I will suggest that to make things easier, the Exodus, seven last plagues, show us the major world events. And the Revelation plagues show us the effects that those major world events are to have on Babylon. Now, another thing that we should consider. As Israel continues to return to their land in accord with Ezekiel chapter 37, the Valley of Dry Bones, one may watch how rapidly the eastern and western blocks of Ezekiel 38 are coalescing. I hear you clearing your throat. Oh, I thought it was just for the purpose of Ezekiel 38. Now, it is in our own day that we have seen in 1979 Persia or Iran shifting into the Eastern Bloc. I initially think, well, what's so surprising about that? Except that for 2.5 millennia, Persia and the great Russians were at loggerheads. Ever since the queen of the Russians, or Magog, the Massageti, lost her son to Cyrus, king of Persia. And then she turned around with her forces and was the first one to be able to kill Cyrus, king of Persia, the same one we have in the scriptures. And for 2,500 years, they hated each other. They were utterly at opposites. For a shorter time, but still long, the Turks and the great Russians couldn't get along and hated each other and fought each other. But in 1979, the Russians helped the Ayatollah overthrow the Shah. Until then, our prophecy of Ezekiel 38 couldn't be fulfilled. And in just the current few years, we are now watching the Turks shift from the Western Bloc to the Eastern Bloc. It is forming. Now, I'll suggest that we have in the seven churches of Revelation, chapters 2 and 3, and then we go to chapter 8. Let's see. That would be chapter, I guess it would start with chapter 6, that we have the seven seals. And then starting in chapter 8, we have the seven trumpets. That these are all things picturing the gospel age, covering the gospel age. So we'll suggest that, remember in Ezekiel how it says that we have this scroll that was written on the inside and on the outside? Well, the inside view gives us the inside view at Jericho or Babylon, and the outside gives us the Lord's people view of what's going on. And that's why we have a difference between the seven seals and the seven trumpets. And it says, in this scroll, in the inside of the scroll were written lamentations, plural, and mourning, and woe. And now you've just heard, I'm not sure whether that was a lamentation or a mourning or a woe. It certainly was timely. One that is plural. And I will suggest that the first event that we had was a lamentation. It was accompanied by the white horse. The second a mourning, the third one's a mourning, and now the lamentation is detached from the first one. And then the last three are one, two, and three woes. The white horse goes forth, the gospel goes forth under Jewish domination, but it goes forth in its purity. Then with the fall of Jerusalem and the Judean kingdom, we have a red horse, and that's under the rule of heathen Rome. The mourning of the black horse under so-called Christian Rome, and then the least lively at all, the pale horse, under pagan Rome. But then, papal Rome, you're right. Then, a woe comes along for them. A star falls from heaven. At the time of the Reformation, the papacy fell in the eyes of the people. Then we have a second woe, where the four horses are loosed, and would suggest that that is an era of Protestant expansion. And then lastly, we have the gospel age harvest. But there is some good news in all of this, and that is that it will be followed by the 1,000-year kingdom of Christ. We have also, however, seven times around Jericho on the last day. And I will suggest that in these seven last plagues, the first was the flies in Egypt, in Exodus. The second was murrain that killed the cattle. That's a destructive plague. Third, blains on man and beast. The fourth, hail with thunder and lightning and fire that ran along upon the ground. And it was certainly destructive. It destroyed two of the crops of Egypt. And then we have the plague of the locusts that took out the other two crops of Egypt. Now, there's a reason for the difference, because the barley and the rye come up first. And maybe it's only about 7 weeks later that the wheat and the spelt comes up. And so they hadn't come up during the plague of the hail, but they are destroyed by the following plague. And then finally, the death of the firstborn. the heirs of Satan's kingdom are destroyed, because there will be no more kingdom of this world for them to inherit. Now, as soon as we get to this last day, I always wondered, why did it take 40 years to get a plague? And the answer is because I was ignorant of the Long Depression. It began in 1873, and it lasted into the 1890s. It was both a convenience and an inconvenience. It was, of course, rough for the various denominations because they were short on money. On the other hand, when the message went forth of "come out of her, my people," they were less able to defend against it. So we have first the flies. It's not a destructive plague in this Long Depression. And it's that that led step by step to the beginning of the restoration of Israel. We have just about enough time to go through the in a little more detail. The Long Depression started in 1873. The following year, in the autumn of 1874, the fall planting resulted in a miserably poor harvest in the spring-summer of 1875. As a result, the Ottomans insisted that the Christians still continue, Christian farmers still continue to pay their dimitude or taxes, which were two or three times what Muslims had to pay. And when there wasn't any grain to pay it with, they simply came in, they took what food they had, they took furniture, they took whatever they could find, and went off with it, and left the Christians with nothing except to starve. And this caused what they called the Christian Revolt in the summer of 1875. That's the year that began in the autumn of 74 and lasts to the autumn of 75. And the Ottomans put down that revolt brutally, cruelly. The following year, I think it was Montenegro and Bosnia, not Montenegro and Serbia, I think it was, that revolted. And that was brutally put down. In the next year, it'd be 1876. And the Russians were seeing that their interests in the Balkan Peninsula were being taken away by the Ottomans. The Ottomans in October of 1875 had already declared bankruptcy. The Russians weren't that much better off, but they figured they can't afford to go to war, but they can't afford not to. So they did. And in the beginning of 1878, they took the city of Adrianople, a mere 100 miles from the capital of the Ottoman Empire in Constantinople or Istanbul. And as a result, they sued for peace, and they signed a treaty of San Stefano. Now, already the Ottomans didn't have any friends when they went bankrupt because they were refusing to repay the powers of Christendom their debts. So anyway, the Europeans were not willing to let the Russians dominate the Balkan Peninsula, so they convoked the Congress of Nations in Berlin, Germany. And the result was that the first Jewish prime minister of England, in his second round, managed to convince the Pasha of the Ottoman Empire, "Look, you guys are broke. You need money. I think I can find some buyers for that no-good land of Palestine." And so it began. The first new Jewish community was Petah Tikva, or Door of Hope, from the scripture. And that was October of 1878. Actually, they left Jerusalem in late October, and they wound up getting to Petah Tikva in the first week of November. About a month later, Guy Oni was begun. And then roughly every month thereafter, there was a new Jewish community established in Palestine. So at least momentarily, the Pasha was content. And so were the Jews worldwide, delighted to be going back to their land. Now, do you suppose there was some divine design in all of that happening? But fortunately, well, let's see, our next plague then, the murrain that killed the cattle, destructive, well, next event was World War I. That's our second major world event. And I might mention, this is the first, the Long Depression is our first truly major worldwide event since the flood of the time of Noah. The second one came only 40 years afterwards, World War I, destructive. It was followed by blains on man and beast, the Great Depression. Not destructive, but terribly annoying. Followed by the hail with thunder and lightning and fire that ran along upon the ground. Destructive, all right, was World War II. And then we have locusts that were brought in by the east wind, and they ate up the remaining crops of Egypt until, under Moses' direction and God's power, the west wind came, a mighty west wind, and blew them all out again. Does that look like leftist atheism, communism? So that brings us to the conclusion that in all likelihood, we have exactly two major world events remaining. We have the darkness, the 3 days of darkness. Does that mean a deep depression? Darkness is not destructive, but no man could move from his place for 3 days. It's reasonable to assume that the thing that caused that darkness in Egypt was the eruption of the volcano Thera, somewhat southeast of Greece. And if so, if you have volcanic ash in the air, you're not going to want to go outside. You get that in your eyes, and you don't know where you're going. Now, will the Deep Depression be 3 years long? Well, I plan to watch and see. Now, the last one here, the death of the firstborn, that's Armageddon, because afterwards, the Exodus is the result, and at the end of this age, after Armageddon, we finally get to the thousand-year kingdom of Christ. Now, the essence of everything that we study should be the application of it to ourselves. Remember one fellow at work, a man of Christian character, asked me one time, how would you like to spy on your worst enemy? And I think about it, and he says, look in the mirror. So, what should we do now because of what we believe? Well, if we understand that the, quote, what's represented by the angel coming down out of heaven in chapter 18, Revelation 18:1, and it results in the call, come out of her, my people, because Babylon has fallen. If we believe that Christ has returned, then the logical conclusion is we are being called to come out of Babylon. What is Babylon? Well, of course, that's variously defined depending on who you're talking with. Some people will say, well, it's the Roman Church. Some people will say it's the Roman Church plus the Eastern Orthodox. Some people will say all of the churches that have had a church-state relationship. Some will say it's everybody but us. The brethren back 100 years ago heard that. If it's everybody but us, then why are we now in an institution that is commanding the brethren what they shall do and not allowing them the freedom which is in Christ? And so the call continued, come out of Babylon number two, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins. And if we are not careful, the call will come out again. Come out of Babylon number three, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins. Could it happen a third time? Well, Lot had to come out twice. But Elijah was called to come out of the city three times. So, if we are vigilant, we won't have to worry about the third time. But only if we are vigilant. Remember, there's a little expression that, I believe in Christian liberty. Everybody has a right to my opinion. And this is the sort of thing we need to be careful of, because this is what we were called to come out of 140 years ago. And this is what we were called to come out of 100 years ago. So that is the most practical application of understanding that Christ has returned in the first phase of his parousia, or presence, is it means to come out of Babylon and stay out of Babylon. Now, another thing you can find in the reprints, a short article, very short article, maybe only a paragraph or so long, entitled, Do Not Urge the Unready to Come Out of Babylon. Not good for them, not good for us. But what should our attitude be towards such? We need to develop the mercy towards them that we are obligated to extend to them in the thousand-year kingdom of Christ. And a third thing, Israel is going back to their land. Have you noticed in this world how much hatred there is of Israel? Leftist atheism is totally hating Israel. Now, Islam goes beyond that and hates not only Israel, but all Jews in the world. Their post-Quran writings say that only when every last Jew in the world is exterminated can Allah's kingdom begin. You see what they're upset about? At our Lord's return, there were maybe 20,000 Jews in Palestine. And now there are more than 5 million Jews there? What's wrong with Allah? Now, what else should we do now? I will suggest that what we see happening in the world today makes it questionable that there can be a future Antichrist that's worse than Rome, especially papal Rome. Should watch for is this gathering of three spirits in the world today. Now, is it the same as the three unclean spirits of Revelation 16? Well, let's watch and see. But the major spirits in this world today are leftist atheism, the hard left, Christianity, organized Christianity, sectarian Christianity, headed by Rome, and Islam. Some other time we can talk about that in more detail. Now, we can reasonably expect that we have one more major world event to go before Armageddon, and that would be the thing that corresponds to the 3 days of darkness in Egypt and the drying up of the Euphrates in Revelation, which would again suggest a deep depression. Best advice for that is two things. Get out of debt and stay out of debt. When one is in debt and a depression begins, he is taken for a slave. Now, what else can we do on the plus side? We have technology like the world has never seen before. Some of it's good and some of it you wonder. But we can use modern technology for public witness and personal witness. And let's do so while we are still able to do so. Make the most of it. It may be taken away. And also to our Jewish friends, let's encourage our Jewish friends to learn Hebrew and for at least their children to make Aliyah, that is to immigrate to Israel, while it is still not dangerous. Those Jews who left Germany before the Depression did wisely. Those Jews who leave now the Americas before a deep do wisely. And even though they may be close friends, let's still encourage them to go to the homeland that God has set up for them. Now, I think my time is up. So I hope this has been profitable. And let us do what we can to live what we believe.